like talking to lawyers sometimes. It gives me insights into the areas I should worry about a little bit. And there's two topics I wanted to talk about today: intellectual property for small businesses, as well as the impact of AI. Stephen Weigler joins me today on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Alinea Partners is your sales readiness assessment company. They identify untapped opportunities in offer development, managed services, and customer experience. They pioneered the secret shopper in the IT channel, and they want to help you get your provider going with instant value and momentum. Contact them at alinea-partners.com. That's alinea-partners.com. And remember, profit is not something to add at the end. It's something to plan for in the beginning. Tell them Dave sent you. So I got to start with something that you know you focused a lot of time on, and that's intellectual property and intellectual property law. I'm kind of intrigued to get your sense, because in this space, oftentimes, you know, MSPs, value-added resellers, are delivering technology services, and they may not think that their own business has a lot of IP there. What do you define as the valuable IP that's worth protecting in a services business like this?
I always look at businesses, especially service businesses, as what does that business think the value of their company is? And if they're like, well, it could be a cost proposition. It could be we do it in a more platform-oriented approach, that we have better relationships with our vendors, such as, you know, Microsoft or something. There's a whole bunch of reasons that a services business is going to be have a competitive advantage. And if you don't think you have a competitive advantage, then we should have a different discussion, which is, why are you around? It's just not a particularly entrepreneurial thought, just thinking I'm a business, but I have no intrinsic value. And so the idea is to really look at, what are the aspects of your business that are making you stand out from others? So one is, there's this concept of trademark, which is your whole brand and what it means. So when you close your eyes and you think about Microsoft, well, you can picture the products they have. You can picture the logo. You can picture the customer experience, which is, you know, at the consumer levels next to none. But the point is, or even better, Apple. Like, think about the whole brand experience. And so every services business is about customer experience. And so that customer experience is your brand. And as an IP attorney, what I'm trying to do is distill the aspects of your brand that are protectable, that you want to make sure that no one else takes. So for Apple, for example, it's the apple. It's like, you see that apple with the bite out of it, and that's been since I've been in fifth grade. You know that it's Apple computers. And the other things are, well, your processes and procedures might be something that's unique, and you might want to copyright that. You might have a unique code sequence that's custom coded or source code that you're using that is worthy of some copyright protection. There's something called a business process patent. That's really hard to come by, but it's really like, can you get a computer to do a unique sequence of things that can be considered an invention that could be looked at? So anyway, you stack the, and then also the most important for a services business is, there's a reason the customer's calling you as opposed to someone else, and that is most likely a combination of your brand, meaning they trust that the customer experience is going to be good, and that you have some internal things that you do very well in operations. And that's called trade secret. How you guys, meaning the services company, gets from point A to point B efficiently and makes money. And you have to protect that against potential infringement from employees and independent contractors. And so you create through an employment manual or through other means, you can create what's called trade secret protection.
a lot of the listeners that have been listening to your examples, particularly because the examples, a lot of them are big companies, right? And so immediately they're thinking that, you know, this is a company with a lot of assets. I can see the very unique nature. But if a company is small, right? And so they're in the same way that they view as a craftsman knows their trade and they've got their way of doing it, but their resources are much more finite and much more small. How do you guide them when they're looking at it from the perspective of sort of small, where they're super price sensitive in this space?
Ultimately, you might want to sell the business. You might want to, and you're going to want to, you know, protect your play against competitors. And so it's a very basic, getting a trademark is a very basic process. We have a program called Total TM. You have to search the marketplace to see if anyone else has been using that mark. Well, if someone else has been using that mark, you have potential defensive issues, like meaning you might get sued someday. So if you're using Apple and you might have a computer services business, well, I have a feeling Apple's going to figure out you have it. And if you're not licensed to use it, you're going to get a cease and desist letter. So we search it to see defensively, and then we file the trademark and prosecute it. The time, it takes a long time, but the cost is $1,000. It's really not a very expensive process. It's less than, you know, some of my carpet cleaning examples. So that's the basics are very easy to come by. And so copywriting your processes and procedures, number one, no one's ever going to see those. And you have copyright on them in case, like, for example, an employer steals them. Well, you have copyright. They've created a copyright violation and your whole total spend is $500. And so you're really you're looking at low price items. You're just doing it, but you're doing the same thing that large organizations do, just at a much smaller scale. The beautiful thing about protecting intellectual property is it's an even playing field. It's really there's government fees, there's very little attorney cost, and if you go through the process and protect it, you can build a wall the size of your business to protect yourself.
As you brought up copyright, I want to use that to transition, actually, to talk about another space that we as technologists have been exploring a lot, and that's AI right now, particularly with as much buzz as going around with generative AI. But we can see a lot of uses where this is going to be important for providers. You know, Microsoft is going to be rolling out Copilot across the platform to allow users to be more creative with AI technologies. You can go right to technologies like ChatGPT or Stable Diffusion and generate such. Give us a little bit of the lay of the land as it relates, you know, copyright and AI right now.
Dave, I am blown away at this recent advent of AI. It came in like a hurricane. And it's only the concept, at least from the legal field, it was 2 months ago I sat in on a lawyer talk, and it was well, this isn't something we have to deal with today, is what the experts were saying. A month later, attorneys are using it to write briefs and getting in trouble because the briefs weren't right. And I mean, they were citing things the AI made up on sites that's really bad. You have to be a really bad attorney to trust AI to write your brief. But anyway, I mean, that's a really bad move. So anyway, this is coming in a storm. So here's the situation, everyone. AI didn't create itself. It was created by scanning, by really smart computer scientists, scanning a lot of copyrighted material. Because if you look at most books, most sources of information, the Encyclopedia Britannica, Wikipedia, which is somewhat protected, but you go on and on and on, those are all, there's places that are, unless they're government resources, they're mostly copyrighted. And so it's scanning all this data and then pulling from it and twisting and turning it and cranking it out in a form that the user wants. How that happens is really what the computer science is. What are the ramifications to someone using it and using copyrighted work that was used to create the AI that you're using to, say, promote a good or a service or a product? That's a really super loaded issue that hasn't been settled by the courts. My interpretation of it, based on this latest Andy Warhol case, the Supreme Court takes copyright very seriously. And so as much as I know, especially in computer sciences, especially in technology, there's a copyleft movement. People don't love the concept of copyright. Copyright protects original works of art, including the code that's been cranked out, if it's been copyrighted. If someone, it's tangible, meaning it's written, that's tangible, you can, and it's a work of art. It's literature. So that would open that use up to a copyright claim. And the courts have yet to test it. So what do you do? Because I think if I were listening to this, I'd be like, well, thanks, Steve, but I'm not going to write all my own content when there's this out there just because you're saying that there's some theoretical copyright claim. And so there's certain things that you're going to hold out to your general audience, which is a lot of marketing material. So say if you're using it for marketing, like I want to explain why I'm the best value-added reseller. And you type, how can you be the best value-added reseller? And then you stick it into a paragraph in your marketing literature. Well, you might want to just Google and check that the way you're doing it, check some of the key phrases, and that the way you're doing it haven't been used before under copyright. And that's I think, where we are on the subject. It's really new, and it's really like, I'm so fascinated by it, but I don't, it's not like I have a court opinion or something to focus on.
It's interesting. I was talking with a colleague recently, and he said, when lawyers are confused and befuddled over a new technology, it's disruptive. And it's because you can actually, by that framework, allows us to know that something is truly disruptive to previous frameworks when the lawyers can't wrap their heads around it.
Well, think about it. I mean, the next thing is going to be in code. Like, you're going to be able to say, give me some string code that focuses on tying my code together. And where'd that code come from? Like, where are they pulling it from? Proprietary sources? Are they pulling it? We don't know. And that's, so you have to kind of trust your source. And the thing about code that makes it really difficult, and this is something to think about for production too, is that you can file copyright for code without actually showing the code. So you can show the first 10 pages of the code and the last 10 pages of the code to the copyright office. You can have like a phone book. That sounds old fashioned, but a huge amount of papers in between it. And that could be, you don't know what's been copyrighted or not because it's trade secret code. And so it is a Pandora's box. And so I just would encourage listeners to be really careful to read up on it. And, I use, when I'm looking for a subject to talk about, I use AI to see what other people are thinking about it. And then I put my own spin on it. And so I think, the only way that humans are going to carry their weight is to put into it only things that humans can do.
So what's your take on something like what Adobe is doing with Firefly? They're coming out and they're saying, we're only training these models on materials that we own. And thus, we're going to indemnify use so that anything that you generate from this is original or based on items that you are licensed to use. What's your take on that strategy in the market?
I don't think that's not my client base. Like no one can afford that. So that's a big play. I think it's interesting, but it's just like anything else. It's like, in a way they're creating their own like Betamax or something, like, it's their own system. And so will that system stay? Will that stand the test of time, or will everyone be, VHS?
So the last area I wanted to walk a little bit through is, you've got some specific thoughts on the way to protect SaaS models with both a combination of IP and business strategy. Give me a little bit of insight in the way that you think things are a little different in the SaaS world.
I love SaaS. Like, I think it's an amazing business model. So I think in the SaaS model, what really is important is a lot on the user interface. And so as far as protection. And so what's important is that that every aspect in that user interface, because a lot of times you're not going to necessarily own the back end. You're not going to own the database. That's going to be like a SQL server or something. You're not going to own the, in other words, you're piecing a lot of the back end together through subscription models and licenses to get it. And so really what you own is not like what Apple would do, but this is what most SaaS models of probably the people that are listening look at. Like it's you piece together licenses on the back end, and then on the front end, it's all your own creative spin. So for example, I use a legal product called Clio. Well, it's all about that they took what's already been invented and do it for law. So the database is not like they've created their own unique database or using probably a Microsoft product or something for that database. So on the front end, it's really what is the unique look and feel of that SaaS model? What are the terms of use and service of that SaaS model? And how can we really protect that and create a viable subscription model which on the business side involves pricing, it involves customer recognition, it involves getting up on the Google Analytics and web pages. On the protection, it involves making sure a lot of people take terms of service, terms of use, and they just cut and paste it, like and privacy policies, and then they don't adhere to it because they never read it. They took it off someone else's website. So really understanding software as a service means software as a service. That's a service model. And so you're providing a service, and you have to understand what services you're providing and what legal liabilities you have for that. And between that and like really customizing the customer experience or UI, which is, again, something that's copyrightable, it can be trademarkable, you can really excel at that SaaS model. And I can guarantee you that SaaS models are very sexy in the M&A market, meaning everyone likes up subscription models, and so that you can grow for a very little incremental cost. And you really have to have a combination of your code put together and be able to identify which pieces are open source, which pieces are licensed, and which pieces are original source code. And then the second thing you have to be able to do is identify load testing. And so you have to identify how many people can go on this subscription model. You can't do that early enough when it comes to trying to sell the SaaS model. Because chances are, and my experience in SaaS is that if it does well, it's going to outgrow the entrepreneur's opportunity to service that marketplace. And so you're going to need partners and you're going to need bigger players to do that. And so all these things are crucial from the very beginning of your building your SaaS model. I hope that answered the question.
It does. So, Steve, if people are interested in learning more, how can they get in touch?
If anyone's interested, you go to www.emergeconsel.com and just book some free time to talk to me. And then we'll talk about your business and what your goals are. And then we can get into what I can do. My favorite clients are ones that I can build a win-win relationship with and be their client, their counsel for a long time until they hopefully successfully exit.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.